this is Monitor 68, the program that asks the question, whatever happened to Fabian? And then answers it 2.5 minutes from now. I'm your host, Ted Steele. Sound of today called soul coaxing. Many of the sounds of yesterday were made by a young man named Fabian. You remember him. He came along right after Elvis, who came along some years after Frankie. But all were teenage idols and did very nicely at a very early age. Reporter Jack Eigen interviewed Fabian from Monitor in Chicago.
Fabian from Philadelphia. What is your name? It's not Fabian, is it?
No, my full name is Fabian Anthony Forte, F-O-R-T-E.
Oh.
Manager Bob Marcucci, who also managed Frankie Avalon, chopped off the last name Forte and said Fabian. Well, that's an odd name. It's my grandfather's name. It's Fabiano in Italian. It's a very odd name. We'll play this up as a gimmick. As you well know, it was really the name Fabian. Who is Fabian? What is Fabian? What is a Fabian? You know, they played it up pretty big. Then because it was the odd name, it paid off.
Yeah. In your teens, you made $1 million. As a teenager, you reached the $1 million mark. What does that mean to you, being a teenager and being a millionaire? Did that kind of throw you for a loss a little bit?
I felt pretty good, Jack.
I hope so.
In the first 2 or 3 years when I was recording, I really didn't realize what was happening to me. It was happening too fast. That's why I decided to give up the recording and try and really sink my teeth into the business by studying acting and taking my time, because I felt at the rate I was going, I would be, well, it's an old cliche, but it has been at 18 years old when I decided to quit singing. But, it does seem funny. It really does, but it was happening too fast. I wanted to slow down a bit.
But I did read where you were a little tired of just being a teenage idol and just singing on records, and you wanted to become a good dramatic actor and all, and
that's my goal, Jack. That's my goal. I'd really like to be. Instinctively, I feel a lot better when I'm on stage in a play or in front of the cameras on television or motion pictures.
How old are you now, Fabian?
I just turned 25, February 6th.
You probably know teenagers pretty well. You know what makes them tick? Because these kids flocked around you for a long time. You're an idol. And they did idolize you. We read so much about the teenager of today. And they're kind of rapped quite a bit.
Yes, they are.
What is your reaction to what you read about teenagers? How did you find the teenagers? Did you find them kooks, or how did you find them?
Not at all. Not at all. The great minority, as I like to put it, is played up in the press today with the marijuana situation, the LSD situation, whatever, robbery situation. There was an article in Time or Newsweek or something not too long ago where it only brings to part only 5% of the teenage population. What about the other 95%? They deserve a lot of credit, but that's not played up in the press. Only the bad things are. Growing up, they have growing pains. They have to go through many experiences like I did. We all did. But as far as the, I hate to use, not hardcore, but the people who make the press and make the news, that's the only people we hear about in my day when I was singing, and people like the Beatles and the Stones of today. Some of them fail to realize the responsibility they have over young people, like who I really dig the Beatles and the Stones, the music and things like that. But when a person like, we'll forget who said it, I come out and said, I use LSD, and he has such a great following with the young people, I think it's wrong. They should stop and take a look at the responsibility they really do have.
Fabian the singer, now in his second career as Fabian Anthony Forte, the actor. Sherry, don't go. Sherry, why not stay right here on the Monitor Beacon? Here's Mel Torme on Monitor with something I'd rather listen to than live. It's a day in the life of Bonnie and Clyde.
It was the 10th day of August, way back in 33. A roller skating around in the town where I live, who did I happen to see? Well, I was close to the bank when the battered old Lincoln pulled alongside. And you never believe who got out of that car. It was Bonnie and Clyde. She looked as sweet as a primrose, with hair the color of sand. And then I noticed a blue sealed Colt automatic she held in each hand. When I saw the big double-barrel shotgun he held at his side, then I knew that our bank was in for a visit to Bonnie and Clyde. And while they were in there, the birds didn't sing, and the wind didn't blow, and the world kind of held. And I could just picture the folks in the bank with their hands in the air, awful trembly and scared to death. And then the bank door flew open and patting money back out. And they were giggling and laughing as happy as kids, of that there wasn't a doubt. As she got in the car, she looked down at me. What do you think? She gave me a grin, blew me a kiss, winked me a wink. And then they drove away. They shot a man in a meadow. They laid their side by side. And lots of people for hundreds of miles around were glad to hear that they died. But I know somewhere there were a pair of women who cried. Yes, the broken-hearted mothers of four, Bonnie and Clyde. The broken-hearted mothers of Bonnie and Clyde. Yes, the broken-hearted mothers of
Monitor on stage. Here's Don Adams.
First thing I did as soon as I got to Vegas, right off my golf course. I played a really tough. I'll tell you how tough this course was. First hole I took, let's see, 16, 18, 26, 32. That got me off the tee. Then I had 17 lost balls, three in the ball washer. I finally ended up on the green in 49, but I had a tough break. Three putted. Ended up the day with a 296, which isn't bad, but I get tired after four holes. I don't know. I had a wonderful experience on the golf course today. Had a hole in nothing. Missed the ball and sank the divot. I was out last week. I was on the first tee. I was by myself. And some guy came along, total stranger, never seen him before. And he said, do you mind if I play along with you? I said, no, glad to have you. Get up and hit. This guy gets up on the first tee, takes out a brand new ball, puts it down, gets up, takes a big swing, right into the lake. Takes out another new ball, right into the lake. Takes out another new ball, over the fence, into the road. So I said to him, I said, look, why don't you use an old ball? And he said, I've never had any. Golfers are all crazy, you know. They're all out of their minds. I tell you the true story. Happened to a friend of mine. Came into the 18th hole. He was four under par. Now, on the 18th hole, he took a 17. Now, he broke every club in his bag, took the bag, threw it into the lake, walked into the locker room, into the washroom, took out a razor blade, slashed both wrists, held them over the sink. Another guy walked in and said, you want to play tomorrow? He said, what time? Two guys are on the first tee, and there's another guy on the first fairway, about 200 yards out, and these two guys are in a hurry. So the one guy says, go ahead, Joe, hit. You'll never hit him. He's 200 yards out. So Joe gets up, swings, line drive, hits the guy right in the head, drops him like an ox in the middle of the fairway. Now the two guys rush down, and there's the guy laid out in the middle of the fairway with a golf ball embedded in his skull. Says, Joe, what are you going to do? He says, well, I think I'll take my wedge.
That was Don Adams, Monitor on Stage.
L. David Sloan, leave me alone. I'm begging for a chance to forget you, so maybe I can start anew. L. David Sloan, stay off the phone. I'm at a point where my resistance can be destroyed by your insistence. L. David Sloan, give me a break. Leave a girl a heartache. Let me learn to hate you. Let me tear your letters before I ever read them. And when the phone is ringing, alone, be a really big.
Michelle Lee and that fellow of hers, L. David Sloan. Now, Monitor Sports. Lee Allen, historian of the Baseball Hall of Fame and columnist for the Sporting News, knows more facts and figures and statistics about our national pastime than any man who ever lived. But he also knows intimately the players and the daily drama in which they're involved. He told our Monitor reporter one of the most unusual baseball stories he's encountered.
I was talking down in Florida to a player who had a very tragic career, a player who had a lot of courage by the name of Bruce Camel, and who three times during the course of his career was floored by spinal meningitis and was told that he would never play again. And as you all know, one of the real heroes of baseball was Lou Gehrig, who went to an early death with a very rare crippling disease. Well, Bruce Camel was telling me that just before his third and last meningitis, he hit a ball to center field against the Yankees at the stadium that just seemed to sink, and DiMaggio came in and fielded it in a hurry and threw hard to first base, and Camel's legs were just so heavy that he was almost thrown out. And when he got to first, Gehrig turned to him and he said, "Bruce, what's the matter with you?" And he said, "I don't know." He said, "My legs feel heavy." And he said, "I feel exactly as I did before this last attack of meningitis." And Gehrig said to him, "Gee, that's tough, Bruce. I'd sure hate to have something like that."
And, of course, we all know that Gehrig himself was struck down shortly after that.
Very shortly afterward, and I think the irony is just fantastic.
You can follow sports every weekend right here if you...
Keep in step with money.
A note here from the Internal Revenue Service. File your 1967 federal income tax return on that pre-addressed tax form mailed to you. Now, that helps to identify your correct tax account. If you don't have a pre-addressed form, blank returns are available at any of your friendly Internal Revenue offices, most banks, or post offices. In the Tijuana Brass with The Happening. And in Yuma, Arizona, it's happening on KYUM. Wherever your NBC station is, you'll be hearing more of Monitor on it after a brief timeout. I'm your host, Ted Steele.
Don't go away, there's more to come. More to interest everyone. Just stay tuned, we'll be back soon.
Problems are often related, and so are the people who cause them. If you have family problems, please call me, Dr. Joyce Brothers, weekdays from 9 to 10 a.m. on WNBC, and we'll look for an answer together.
Monitor New York, your weekend sound on WNBC New York. Monitor with Twiggy News from London. Twiggy is planning a visit to Moscow, and she was told that the Russian weekly Literary Gazette recently called her a capitalist tool and a wrong image for modern youth. Twiggy's answer to that was, it's a load of codswallop. That's cockney for baloney. And it goes well with borscht, Twiggy, so bon voyage. Here's Hugo Montenegro in The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. Tony Bennett on Monitor with Fool of Fools.
Fool of fools, wake up before she breaks your heart. I warned myself from the start. To my heart I said, why reach for love above your head? She'll break the rules. She's not the kind who could be true. You come from two different schools. She really learned to love this fool of fools. Fool of fools, wake up before she breaks your heart. I warned myself from the start. Gonna share to my heart. said, why reach for love above your head? She'll break the rules. She's not the kind who could be true. You come from two different schools.
Where 2 minutes from now you'll meet a Martin. It's not a Bird, it's not a Tony, it's not a Dino. It's Gail Martin, Dean Martin's lovely young daughter. And here's Margaret Whiting. I hate to see me go.
You make me think that you love me, but I get around and I know you placed another love above me. See me go. Somehow your actions confuse me. You're not the boy I used to know. Now I'm afraid you're gonna lose me. Oh, I hate to see me go. You had me convinced that it might work out. I hate you, but I guess I'll have to go. I was a fool to believe you. You took me in and I know. Now I guess I'll have to leave you. Oh, I hate to see me go. You had me convinced that it might work out. But how? I hate you, but I guess I'll have to go. I was a fool to believe you. You took me in and I know. Now I guess I'll have to leave you. Oh, I hate to see me go. How I hate to see me go.
Here's Monitor's weekly report on this younger generation with Linda Sutter.
I suppose that there's no more vivid indication that this younger generation has come into its own than when the people we thought of as the children of stars are suddenly stars themselves. The most recent example of this is Gail Martin, Dean Martin's 22-year-old daughter, who opened last week at the Persian Room in New York and whose performance there demonstrates that she's well on her way towards being a star in her own right. Gail, is the Persian Room the first major nightclub you've played?
I've played about three of them. I mean, I've played a lot of nightclubs for 2 years, all kinds of strange joints and things like that. But the most important date is this one.
Was all your family there?
Not all of them. My father's in Durango, Mexico, in the picture, so he couldn't make it. And he doesn't try to make my openings or any of our openings. He's a very nervous father in that respect. He sure will do fine, but he likes to read about it and hear about it.
Whatever made you decide to go into show business? Was it a natural course of events, pretty much?
I think so, because I never really decided. I was always doing it.
What about your father? Did he give you a lot of advice as far as this goes?
Nothing at all, absolutely. Do whatever you can do well, but do whatever makes you happy.
What do you think is the most popular misconception about him?
Oh, the drinking. Absolutely, and that he's kind of a party man. He is quite funny. I mean, he gets up at no later than 7 every morning, on any given morning, ever since I've known him. And he either goes to work or he goes and plays golf, which is really his work. His work is his hobby. And comes home around 6, 6:30, has a couple drinks, has dinner, has wine with dinner, drinks a few beers and plays pool after dinner and goes to bed. That's the fabulous fun of Steve Martin. He's divine and he's fun while he's doing it, but he's not up long.
I guess there are obvious advantages to being Dean Martin's daughter. But there must be a lot of disadvantages.
Are there? There are, and they're much harder to get across and explain to people. They go, sure. And I go, no, really.
Well, tell me, what are they?
After you've been bought, not because you're talented, but because you're Dean Martin's daughter, because people will come out of curiosity to see you, then, if you're on television, it's a difficult thing to try and get across your own personality. But people are always looking at two people. Yeah. Now, the Nightclub 4, which I adore, is the best way of getting your own personality across. They can't see anyone else. I'm the only one standing up there. I talk about my father, but it's little asides and jokes, and not many. And, but they adore that. I mean, he is my father, and I adore him.
Would you like to get into acting?
Oh, naturally. Yeah, musical comedy and films. That's how I started. What I wanted to do. Oh, yeah. Or movies. It doesn't matter. I could get bored by having to do the same thing. I like a whole new challenge and a whole new kind of fun because I like to do all of it.
So what's the worst part of it for you?
The road. Traveling on the road. And being in love.
Oh.
It can be quite a trip. My phone bill is quite something, let me tell you.
You have a beau, then?
Yeah, I have a fiancé. And my phone bill... From Puerto Rico alone.
Oh,
I go places and work for nothing. Just so I can call to keep sane. You know.
When are you getting married?
In the summer. End of summer.
I think that's great.
I do too. I do too. I've had quite enough of this the road. At least you could come and visit me then.
Thank you, Gail.
Thank you, Linda. I like it.
Gail Martin, Dean Martin's daughter, who's currently entertaining everybody at the Plaza Hotel in New York. A lovely singer and a lovely lady. This is Linda Sutter reporting for This Younger Generation on Monitor.
Later this half hour, we'll hear a report from Idaho on how the 4-H Club there is dealing with a serious youth health problem. Monitor Music next, Paul Moriart and Love is Blue, number one song in the country. the music of the Irish Rovers, a St. Patrick's Day special shortly, if you...
Stay right here on the NBC.
On the Monitor Beacon. And here, Begorra is the unicorn on Monitor by the Irish Rovers.
A long time ago when the earth was green, there was more kinds of animals than you'd ever seen. They'd run around free when the earth was being born, but the loveliest of them all was the unicorn. There was green alligators and long-necked geese, some humpty backcamas and some chimpanzees. Some cats and rats and elephants, but sure as you're born, the loveliest of all was the unicorn. The god seen some sinning, and it gave him pain. And he says, stand back, I'm going to make it rain. He says, hey, brother Noah, I'll tell you what to do. Build me a floating zoo. And take some of them
green alligators and long-necked geese, some humpty backcamas and some chimpanzees, some cats and rats and elephants, but sure as you're born, don't you forget my unicorn.
Old Noel was there to answer the call. He finished up making the ark just as the rain started falling. He marched in the animals two by two, and he called out as they went through, hey Lord, I got you
green alligators and long-necked geese, some humpty-backed camels and some chimpanzees, some cats and rats and elephants, but Lord, I'm so forlorn, I just can't see no unicorn.
Then Noah looked out through the driving rain. Them unicorns were hiding, playing silly games, kicking and splashing while the rain was falling. Oh, them silly unicorns.
It was green alligators and long-necked geese, some humpy-backed camels and some chimpanzees.
Noah cried, close the door, cause the rain is falling. And we just can't wait for no unicorn. The ark started moving, it drifted with the tide. Them unicorns looked up from the rocks and they cried. And the waters came down and sort of floated them away. And that's why you never seen a unicorn till this very day. You'll see
green alligators and long-necked geese, some humpty-backed camels and some chimpanzees, some cats and rats and elephants, but sure as you're born, you're never going to see no unicorn.
A unique project, especially for young people, is being conducted in the state of Idaho. At its head is Dan Warren, state leader of youth and 4-H work at the University of Idaho. Mr. Warren was interviewed for Monitor by reporter Foster Mullinex.
You've been dealing with a project on venereal disease as a state 4-H club leader. Why?
Because we found that it's a very important topic now. A quarter of a million teenagers each year are contracting venereal disease, and half of the new cases are between those of 15 and 25 years of age.
Certainly not that many in Idaho, though.
No, we're very proud of Idaho. We rank third from the least infection. I think Wyoming is lowest, Utah next, and then Idaho. But any is too much as far as we're concerned if we're thinking of our excellent position.
How did you get into this, Mr. Warren? You don't have projects in this. You know, as 4-Hers, they carry beef and clothing and sewing and this type of thing, but...
But one of the four H's is for health. And when we found that our health was being impaired by communicable disease, we thought it was within our realm. And a trained nurse, Mrs. Roy Crosby of Boise, Idaho, who is also teaching nurses, came to us and she said, I would like to teach these kids about venereal disease. They don't know anything. Their ignorance is appalling. And I think if I had 8 hours with them, I could train a group of kids that would go out and talk to their friends, and they'd set them straight. Right now, there's no place to learn this. The schools aren't teaching it. Their parents don't know how to teach it. They don't know the language. They don't feel comfortable about it. But if I had a chance to sit down and talk to them, I could do something. There are plenty of information if you would just get over a Victorian attitude that this is naughty to talk about.
Mr. Warren, state leader, 4-H in Idaho, tell us now about the success of the program thus far.
We got a group of parents together, and they gave it the first approval, and then we got a wider group of approval from preachers and Kiwanis and Chamber of Commerce and farm groups, and then they said, okay, go ahead. Then we scheduled 4 films, 1 week apart, and we got some doctors and nurses and lay people to sit as a panel to discuss these things. We had 4 meetings with 150 average of that group, and we invited a boy and a girl from each county, that made 76, to sit in on an 8-hour workshop and went through a planned learning text, which is put out by the, well, I guess it's Education Department in Washington, D.C., by Dr. Swartz. Mm-hmm. We went through that lesson by lesson and showed 4 films. And with each of those films, we held discussions.
Now, these discussions were held with the young people?
Yes, the boys and girls together. We had a panel of lay people to sit there and after the film was shown, to answer questions. Mm-hmm. The discussion is very important to make sure that people really understood the terms. Maybe there's something that they didn't ask and so forth. And we also try to build into this the kinds of tests that are used that it might lead to bacteriological study for a youngster in a career. What a nurse might do, what a doctor's work is, what a public health officer's work is, so forth, so that it was more than just venereal disease cause and control. It was a total understanding of the effect so that, they could speak casually about these diseases just the same as if they're talking about measles or mumps or polio. Unless we are able to look at it straightforwardly, we'll never conquer it.
We've been talking to Mr. Dan Warren, state leader of 4-H Club Work in Idaho. What we've been talking about is possibly a first in the United States among 4-H Club leaders. This is Foster Mullinex for Monitor.
We'll have a song from Dean Martin next on Monitor. It's Old Yellow Line, his latest.
Well, I've been on the road for such a long, long time. I go where it leads me, this old plum of mine. Since she said goodbye, I've almost lost my mind. And all I do is follow the old yellow line. Old yellow line, come down the bend. Old yellow line, will you ever matter? Down the road I see a little hot dark sand. Lots of happy people who won't understand how I got the sorrow in the eyes of mine. Why must follow that old yellow line? Old yellow line, going down the bed. Old yellow line, will you never matter? Well, I'll probably spend the night on some old barroom floor. Let the wine cloud my mind, for I can't see your face anymore. Maybe somewhere down the line I'll stop and then find someone who wants me and I'll love again. When I do, she'll never leave me arms of mine. Never.
Has this ever happened to you?
You're on the platform waiting for the 802. You look down the tracks and you can just see the train way off. So you reach into your pocket for your cigarettes. You're all out. You put down your attaché case, pat your pockets. Nothing. A quick look down the track. Ah, you still have time. So you hustle down to where the cigarette machine is. The train's coming in. You fumble for your change. There. Into the slot. Now the selection button. Nothing. No cigarettes. You bang the machine. Oh, the train's going to pull out. You push the button for another brand. Good. The train's moving. You run. You just make it. You look back. There on the ground. Next to the cigarette machine. Your attaché case.
Are there any other reasons to give up cigarettes? Ask your American Cancer Society.
Purcell and Casino Royale. NBC News on the Hour is next, and then I'll be back with Monitor. I'm Ted Steele, and
we still have more to bring you. Just wait and see. More news, more songs to sing you, more comedy on NBC.
Ah, that good John Briggs sherry wine. Exported to the colonies for the first time. John Briggs makes and bottles it in Jerez, Spain, where the hot sun warms the wine casks, and John Briggs winemasters use the famous Solera system of aging the smooth sherries, blending them gently with younger aged wines now and then to create that incredible smoothness. This bottle of John Briggs Fino carries the date Solera 1908. I like the Fino, very pale and dry. The ladies might like the softer and sweeter John Briggs Cream Sherry Solera 1914. A terrible year for people, great year for John Briggs Sherry. Those Monsieur Henri wine people, you know, the importers of fine wines from all over the world, are bringing John Briggs Sherry to America. Amazing how you see their label wherever a fine wine pops up. John Briggs Fine Sherry Wines, Solera Aged Wines, imported by Monsieur Henri Wines Limited, New York, New York, naturally.
Monitor New York, your weekend sound on WNBC New York.